Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Lunchbox Soapbox. It's great to see you all here, both familiar faces and new ones. I'm Michael Williams, Head of Programming here at the Wheeler Centre. And as I'm sure you're all aware, this is part of a regular series that happens every Thursday lunchtime. We're thrilled to have the speaker we have today. So before I say who it is, because you all know that, could I ask you to turn your mobile phones off if you haven't already? That would be great. Today's speaker is an Australian institution, and she's not just advanced the field of cooking in Melbourne and Australia, but also writing and publishing. She is an absolute legend. I'm sure, like me, you all have a particular big orange tome sitting on the shelf at home, much spattered by stock and wine and other things. It was The Cook's Companion, Stephanie's signature publication, The Bible, was published in 1996, and it must be in something like its 1,000th reprint by now. So please make very welcome Stephanie Alexander.
And welcome, everybody. And I'm just trying to remember what I'm supposed to be talking about, but I think I'm just going to talk, actually. I think that seems like a good idea. Actually, I do know it was a dietary call to arms, and it was my suggestion that one of the reasons that I do what I do now is because I'm really seriously concerned that we have a generation of young people and not so young people who don't seem to understand very much about how to eat well, the joy that it can give on a daily basis. And I'm going to just give you the only bit of statistics that I will talk about today, because they really are the background of what I've built my theory of how to deal with this upon. In a survey in 2008 and 2009, it was revealed that 23.6% of 8- and 9-year-olds in Australia are overweight or obese. 5% of 14 to 16 year olds, only 5% of 14 to 16 year olds eat the recommended number of vegetables a day. 1% of 14 to 16 year olds eat what is considered to be the recommended amount of fruit every day. Now, that's quite scary. And that the other thing, which was a statistic put out by the National Preventative Task Force, reported that in 2008, $58 billion was spent in Australia dealing with the results of obesity in every way. This is heart disease, all sorts of other conditions. So there is a big problem, and with the way many children learn about food, the strong likelihood is that this problem is going to get worse and that there will be an ongoing public health issue. Now, I don't want to talk too much about statistics, because for me, eating well is a matter of great joy, and it's an incredible pleasure and something I do every day. And I would like to feel that what we can do is influence a generation to get the same pleasure and to eat healthily and beautifully and freshly and enjoy it. So I knew that at least you can look back very easily and find that over 25, 30 years maybe, there have been interventions designed by government, both state governments and the federal government, that have attempted to influence the choices that children make. And you can also find that, and they will admit it, the health professionals, that these initiatives have made no difference at all. So a lot of money has been spent, well, it's not a huge amount of money, but money has been spent producing pamphlets, pyramids, ticks, various things. A cautionary advice, guidelines to canteens, and they're quite useful, but they haven't really had a dramatic influence that one can see on behaviour. I felt, and still feel, that the missing link is pleasure, and that you don't get anyone to change behaviour unless the alternative is something that they can see is pleasurable and achievable. It's certainly got to be possible, pleasurable, and that is what I've been trying to do. And I must say that what the intervention that we've designed as a not-for-profit organisation is remarkably successful. And I'll just have a little detour to say, yesterday, as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, we took a busload of the general public who paid a pittance to come on this tour, and we took them to 5 of our schools, and I'll explain our schools in a minute. And the general opinion from the 50 people who were on the bus was they were just knocked out, because you can hear about it, you can listen to me, you can think I'm exaggerating, you can do all those things, and when you actually see the program in action, it is incredibly powerful. The children are just so ecstatic about what they're doing, so focused, so capable, having such a good time. The third school we went to yesterday was East Bentley Primary School, and they gave everybody a little thing as we left. And this was the menu that they prepared, these children, for 50 people. Now, that's any one of us who has had anything to do with food professionally knows that to cook a meal for 50 people that's got to be ready at a certain time, consumed in time for those people to have a tour of the school, get back on the bus, get to the next school, is quite challenging. They did it brilliantly. They produced three dips, a carrot dip, a pumpkin dip, hummus with pita bread chips. They had their wood-fired pizza oven absolutely fired up. They made four different pizzas, one with warrigal greens, which is an indigenous plant, one with basil and pesto and tomato, one with caramelised onion, pumpkin and basil, one with potato and rosemary. These were carried around by the children. They also made a zucchini slice, zucchini and feta fritters, a rocket pear and parmesan salad, a chickpea and preserved lemon salad, and they had preserved the lemons last season, a roasted corn salad and a green salad with chopped up avocado, cucumber and capsicums, all of the vegetables grown by the children in the garden. They then offered us dessert, because we don't think there's such a thing as a bad food, pumpkin bars, mini pear muffins, carrot biscuits, and as we were all getting on the bus, and you know that yesterday was very hot, they handed us either a lemon or a kiwi icy pole, which they'd made themselves. Now, these children, I might add, are 8 to 11 years old. This was prepared by grade 5 and 6, so they were probably more like, on average, 10 years old. The food was delicious. They also gave me little statements. I like to pretend I'm a famous chef. I love Stephanie because she invented it. Well, that was nice. I like gardening because you don't have to spend your money on food. I like cooking because I like watching the mixtures change colour. I like cooking because we get to eat the food for free, various other things. Anyway, that was just an example of what happens in these schools. So to go back a bit, I decided that what I needed to do was to introduce a program at primary level, believing that the younger the children are influenced, the better, and that it would be on a weekly basis. So these children would have a session in the garden that they've created every week, and a double session in the kitchen every week. I had to find a school that was prepared to trial this program, which was Collingwood College. I then wanted to get politicians. I had to get a politician to come and actually see what was happening before my lobbying was going to bear fruit. So I got the then Minister for Education to come, to be given a tour of the garden by the children, to have lunch with the children, to listen to their comments, to watch their area of competence as they move around the kitchen and the garden. And as a result of that, the Victorian State Government gave the first grant of $2.5 million, which enabled 40 Victorian primary schools to get seeding funding to start their own garden and their own kitchen and to start the program. Because Victoria was so successful, I was then able to get the Australian Government to get the Federal Minister for Health, actually it was a pre-election commitment, to come and have a look at what was going on in Victoria, and as a result of that, $12.4 million was given by the Australian Government over a period of 4 years, and we're in just at the beginning of year three of that funding. That is a promise to include a further 190 schools in the program. So today we have 138 schools all around Australia in every territory and every state who are introducing this program on a weekly basis to their students. 13,000 Australian children every week are receiving this education. This is changing lives. It is amazing to see. As I say, you can hear me talk and you can think I'm exaggerating. And I'm not exaggerating. I often do exaggerate. But with this, it's actually a knockout for me. I go to as many schools as I can, but as they are now spread so widely, there are many, many schools that I haven't visited. We get input from those schools that go on our website, and that's going to be increasingly our main means of communication. Well, in our new round, the latest funding round, with schools that have joined the program but haven't yet started classes, we have schools in places such as Bourke in New South Wales. Cooper Pedy. The imagination runs riot. Cooper Pedy, how do you grow a garden? But anyway, they say they've got a very good garden there. We've got a school on Flinders Island. We've got a school in Cairns West. I mean, the distances are enormous. So what my foundation does is to try and support every one of these projects. We have four distance project offices, and their salaries are funded by the federal government, and there's a certain travel allowance so that they can move around. But increasingly that's getting to be a difficult area because the distances to be covered are incredible. So we have four project offices, we have a small team in Melbourne, and we offer training to the specialists who deliver the program. And one of the core messages of all the training that we deliver is this has to be fun. It has to be about pleasure. It is not about this is good for you. It's not about you're eating your greens. It's not about don't eat that. It's not about don't eat fat, don't eat salt. It's about having fun. It's about being hands-on, understanding all the excitement about putting a seed in the ground and watching it grow, and it transforms these children's lives. We have on a daily basis anecdotes from parents, certainly from the kids themselves, but probably more importantly from their parents who say, my child is now eating things that he or she would never contemplate eating before this program started. My child wants to make suggestions about what we cook for dinner. My child wants to make suggestions about what we buy this week. My child, all sorts of things. We've got a lovely letter which I should have brought today because we're very proud of this letter. Now, I know it's only from one child. It is on our website under a heading called Farmer Jack. But Farmer Jack's, who's eight, and who has a school north of Horsham, so it's a really remote little school, decided that he was so taken with it all that he wanted to go home and make a really good vegetable garden. And his mother wrote to us and said that she couldn't credit the change in her child, and how she says something like, every night I used to have to drag him away from the computer to come and have something to eat, and now he's always out in the garden watering, weeding. He weighs all his broad beans. He enters it in a special file on his computer. And he tells his mother that when he's chopped up the broad beans at the end of the season, he talks to her about the nitrogen that it's returning to the soil. And she said there were a series of very hot days over December, and she said, I don't know what I'm going to cook for dinner, or one of those idle remarks one makes. He said, don't worry, Mum, I'll whip something up. So we feel that what we're doing is really important. And it's very exciting to see, and it's the challenge for me is to prove that it changes behaviour so as in order to elicit further meaningful support from government. I've got nothing but praise for the way the government has supported us to this point, but it is a drop in the ocean. There are 7,000 government primary schools in Australia, and we are going to be in 260 of them probably by the end of 2012. So we've got a long way to go, although that's a very significant drop in the bucket. And it does mean that any school that's interested in this program in their own state probably has a school somewhere nearby that they can go and have a look at. And going to have a look at is certainly the most convincing way for a school population to consider what it means, because it's not easy. At the moment it's part funding only. There's a big responsibility on a school to actually make up the balance of funding. They have to support the specialist staff. Each school employs a part-time cook and a part-time gardener, and those part-time staff are paid for by the school itself. So sometimes the school charges a little levy, sometimes they fundraise, sometimes the principal is very creative and manages to squeeze a little bit from here and a little bit from there. We would like to feel that it didn't have to be quite so much of a challenge, because as you can imagine, that really means that as long as the commitment is there from a very strong principal, the school will maintain the program. There is a danger point if that principal moves on or some other crisis happens within the school and the budget has to be rejigged. There is always a danger point. So lobbying is ongoing, and I do spend most of my time lobbying, really, or being on committees and talking to government and negotiating agreements with the Department of Health and Ageing. We see the future being, for us, is in convincing education and health to get together and to understand that this program is both educationally rich as well as offering health benefits, which means that there ought to be money from health going into education. Big challenge. Government don't really like crossover departments, and that remains a very big challenge for us. I think the last statistic, perhaps, which we worked out, because when Jamie was out here last week, he wanted a quick figure that he could get across in a second, and I thought it was quite good. And we worked out that in order to support a program like this in a school, that is, pay the part-time gardener and the part-time cook and provide the extra facilities that you have to buy, you know, the flour, the sugar, the whatever, it costs $11 per child per week. Now, $11 per child per week adds up to about $430 per annum for one child to get this program, which seems to me like a tiny little drip in the whole enormous education budget. So that's the one I'm hanging on to as being hopefully significant. I've probably talked for 20 minutes, have I? Should I be shutting up? I don't know what time I'm supposed to finish. 5, 4, 3, 2, 2. Okay, 2. We have a wonderful website. The website is going to get even better. We're working on it right now. Kitchen Garden Foundation, all one word, .org.au. On the website, it's got lots of fun information. It's got lists of every school in every state. It's got information for schools that might wish to participate. It's got suggestions of how people can help us. Clearly, money is always a lovely idea, but every school requires volunteers. Because the instruction in the garden and in the kitchen is given in tiny groups, 4 or 5 children to a workstation, every school needs volunteers. And what we're finding in the school is that the volunteers have such a ball, and they come back year after year, and they say that we're learning a lot, you know, which is lovely. So anyone who's interested and has got half a day to spare and thinks they might be somewhere near a Victorian school that has one of these programs, ring the principal if you're interested and see if they need volunteers, and most of them do. And they treat their volunteers as gold, and you'll be, at least, at the very least, you'll have a lovely cup of tea and you'll meet some lovely children and become really uplifted by the enthusiasm of these lovely little kids. They just are inspirational. And they're also very good cooks and very good gardeners. They're all taught to use proper chef's knives. Their parents freak out when they come, and I say, in 9 years, we've handed out about 4 Band-Aids. I mean, the first lesson is how to handle a knife, and in the garden, they all have to get a wheelbarrow licence before they're let loose, and which, of course, that is great fun, because they have to do a slalom race with the wheelbarrow to prove that they can manage it safely with a shovel in it at the same time. So it's highly enjoyable. It's got a great future, and I believe this form of intervention is what is going to transform this generation of young people if we can make it grow. Thank you.
We do, as ever, have time for a couple of questions from the audience. We'll ask you to wait until the usher gets a microphone to you if you have a question. So just put your hand up nice and high and we'll get to you all in due course. Someone over this side. So the microphone's coming up to you from behind now. I know it's mysterious, but it's happening.
I'm sorry, Stephanie, I missed the name of the website. Could you repeat it, please?
Kitchen Garden Foundation, all one word, .org.au.
That was a great discussion there. What are your thoughts of starting it in kindergarten?
We get a lot of inquiries from kindergartens. We get a lot of inquiries from independent schools. And all we can say to those schools at the moment, well, it's not all we can say, is we also have a subscription program, which means that those schools that I've mentioned are not at the present time eligible for grants. But if they subscribe to the foundation, they can get a lot of support from us. They get a copy of our magnificent implementation manual, they get access to the members area of the website, they get reduced rates for training and so on. So it's a good program, and in fact this morning was the very first meeting of the first group of subscribers, and that represents I think something like 28 schools, including three from New Zealand, and they all came together today for the very first time to talk about what that means being a subscriber. It's also a good way for a school to start off. I mean, a preschool, and then of course they don't use the logo. We don't give them the logo as a subscriber, but they are free to develop their program according to their needs, but we're at least solving a lot of the problems for them so they don't have to reinvent the wheel.
The age would be okay.
Well, the school or the preschool would probably modify how they present the program.
While you're all building up the courage, I might just ask Stephanie, could you expand on what you see as the link between the gardening and the cooking aspect? Why that's so important to get them involved at that level?
Well, it's part of the magic, for start. The magic of growth is very, very powerful also. When the children plant their broad beans and see the plants grow, understand about the water, understand about mulching, watch the plants grow, get to the point where they recognise what is ripe. It reinforces the idea this is spring, so they get to understand the seasons of the year, they get to understand that everything has its moment, that when you should be eating it and that you shouldn't be expecting to have it at some other time of the year. That I think is fantastic, and it leads them to an understanding of seasonality. And then we reinforce that all the time. Every week, what they are eating is going to be something which can be harvested in that state at that time of the year.
What do they install as the equipment for the kitchens? Because presumably a primary school doesn't have one.
The kitchens are the biggest challenge. No government primary school in Australia, as far as I know, has a teaching kitchen, unless it's a P-12 school, and then it would have an old home economics classroom, which may or may not be lovely, often isn't. So the school has to therefore, and the part of the funding goes towards this, usually convert an already existing space in the garden. It might be a classroom, or in several places I can think of, it was a library, that they had a new building for the library, so they had this quite good space. And then there's guidelines, again in the manual that every school would get, saying it must have 5 workstations, it must have, there are certain non-negotiables, because we know it's not a fry pan in the staff room. This is actually a proper, lovely benches, standard height benches, none of this down here stuff. We want children to be able to go home and transfer what they've learnt during the day to mum's kitchen to work in exactly the same situation. So they must have 4 cooking stations, usually 5, unless it's a tiny school, and they must have enough room in that space so that everybody can sit together at 3. They usually have 3 tables, ovals or rounds. And they also have a harvest bench on which they put all the produce that's come in from the garden so it looks beautiful. And that's the teaching kitchen. And that represents a lot of money. Having said that, I was the week before last in Benarkin, which is a minute place in Queensland, about 3 hours west of Brisbane. And they had built the most fantastic kitchen. Pity I can't show it to you, it's on my phone. But 44 IKEA flat packs they ported from Brisbane in 1 ute and 2 private cars, and a very clever man and his 2 friends put it all together. It is so beautiful, and it cost them $12,500 to put this amazing kitchen together. Weighed 1.4 ton, he told me proudly. And it was so, I mean, determination, an entrepreneurial principle, a committed staff, a committed school council. We need all of those things.
Stephanie, last year when my daughter was at a private kindergarten, they used your idea and the children grew their vegetables, and they had volunteers such as myself as a grandma to come in and help. And to help with the costing, the funding, the parents, there was a list on a board and the parents donated some of the vegetables, but the children grew what they could grow. And it was a fabulous experience. I did it a couple of times during the year. But with kinder children, of course, you know, there's things such as wielding the knives and the fry pans and that sort of thing that is quite tricky and they actually have to learn it. But I was just pleased to see that my granddaughter really has picked up on cooking and eating well, and it was really worthwhile. But it was in the private system, not in the state system.
I think for a lot of private schools the money is not going to be a problem, but I still believe that they would be well advised to be subscribers, because we really have been down the road of so many different problems and challenges and have developed the best way of proceeding. And rather than having everybody struggle to work out how to do it, let them pay $500, I think it is, to be a subscriber and get the good oil.